Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, October 14th. Candidates address teacher retention. They share some ideas for potential solutions to filling 150 openings by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD is a school district with 150 teacher openings. During the Basin PBS debate for Midland ISD school board candidates, those on the November 8th ballot were asked about reasons for the openings and potential solutions. In District 5, Brandon Hodges stated that discipline, or lack thereof, is having an impact on teacher retention. He stated new policies are needed to take care of a chronic problem. He said teachers have to feel safe and the district can't be limited in options to correct those who disrupt class. The lack of solutions, he said, whether we are being serious about teachers doing their jobs. John Truschetti III, the current board president for District 5, North and Northeast Midland, said a culture and environment need to be created where teachers and students can thrive. We have to, from top down, create a system where they feel supported, Truschetti said. Before the start of the current school year, Midland ISD officials told the Reporter Telegram the number of classroom teachers and certified licensed professionals leaving Midland ISD dropped by 30% compared to 2018-19 and dropped by 37.2% compared to 2017-18, when nearly 500 staffers departed. Midland ISD also reported the number of resignations and retirements this past school year was 308, which was down more than 130 year over year. The previous low mark during the last 5 years was in 2016-17, when 339 staff members left. Midland ISD reported this week all classrooms are covered by an adult, and approximately 100 of these are covered by permanent subs. Carrie McNeil, a candidate in District 6, also said teachers have to be provided a place where they are comfortable. Teachers are not feeling appreciated or safe, McNeil said. Sarah Burleson also is running in West Midland. She said potential solutions are recruiting face-to-face and looking at strong campuses inside Midland ISD, those places inside the district where there are high retention rates, and see what they are doing to keep teachers there. In Southwest Midland, Tommy Bishop said he is for the boxes on campus where teachers can provide input. He said it is important for principals and district leaders to see what the heartbeat of the campus is. Reagan Hinojos is looking to knock off Bishop in District 3. He said the lack of discipline in the classroom is impacting teachers. He mentioned the lack of a juvenile justice alternative program and the need to keep students that act out in a more controlled environment. Delisa's specializes in gluten-free sweets and savories. Owners open up their first brick-and-mortar store after 16 years of serving community at farmers markets and online, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Years of stomach, skin, and hair problems left Lisa McNerlin and her daughter Jennifer sick and borderline miserable. After being pricked with a wheat needle during a skin allergy test, Lisa's stomach troubles immediately kicked in, consequently setting off the light bulb in husband Dan McNerlin's head about what could be happening with his daughter as well. When Jennifer eliminated gluten, within 6 weeks her problems went away, Dan explained. From that moment on, the family started searching for food items deemed safe to eat. However, a thin line lies between contaminated and uncontaminated products in the gluten world, especially if processed in a factory or restaurant kitchen, troublesome for people dealing with gluten issues. In fact, an estimated 1 in every 133 Americans endures celiac disease, a genetic autoimmune disease damaging the villi of the small intestine and interfering with the absorption of nutrients from food, according to a report done by research organization Beyond Celiac. This only takes into consideration people who get tested. An estimated 83% of Americans living with celiac disease remain undiagnosed or misdiagnosed with other conditions. Since Jennifer suffers from celiac disease, eating out quickly becomes a no-go, and some gluten-free labels proved untrustworthy. So, using their handy bread maker, the McNerlands began crafting their own loaves. After many trial and error runs, the determined family produced a foolproof pastry and started selling to other gluten-sensitive folks through farmers markets, Facebook orders, and the old Flat Belly Wellness Bar. By mashing Lisa's name with daughter Danielle, who currently stands as her mom's business partner, DeLisa's Gluten-Free Kitchen and Bakery took fruition. A loyal clientele formed, 16 years passed, and the passionate bakers established their first brick and mortar on the first floor of the Wilco building, 415 West Wall Street, Suite 104. From fluffy thrills to savory meals, here's what the company offers. Hot Bites. As someone who experiences a gluten intolerance, I'm well aware of the horrendous gluten-free options in grocery stores and markets, polluting people's perception of gluten-free foods. At best, they taste like stale cardboard, often require a heaping of toppings to make them edible, and quite frankly, make this diet slightly challenging. However, the first time I took a bite of one of DeLisa's goods, my world changed. Made fresh daily and with no preservatives, each treat tastes like a flavorful explosion of deliciousness paired with homegrown love and care, and can be kept on the counter for 3 days, in the fridge for 2 weeks, and the freezer forever, give or take a couple of years. Chocolate Chip Cookie. Melt-in-your-mouth butteriness takes over taste buds within the first nibble. Ironic, considering the recipe doesn't call for any. The cookie packs an extra punch of sweetness without being unbearable and maintains a nice lightness while still feeling like a strong indulgent. Ingredients: oat flour, sugar, flaxseed meal, tapioca flour, olive oil, applesauce, vanilla, baking soda, xanthan gum, salt. Lemon cookie. A fruitier alternative, this double lemon delight satisfies salty, sweet cravings with an acidic twist, both enticing and elegant. Slightly tart, the cookie's steady balance of sugar and sour make the snack a great choice for a post-lunch enjoyment. Ingredients: rice flour, tapioca flour, sugar, eggs, butter, lemons, vanilla, baking powder, soda, salt, xanthan gum. Breakfast cookie. If natural flavors sound appetizing, dive into this pleasant, nutty oat creation, a funky alternative to a boring morning bar. Each woven strand of gluten-free oats held together with peanut butter provides a rewarding crunch and tasty break, ideal for any time of the day goodie. Ingredients: gluten-free oats, peanut butter, brown sugar, flax meal, sugar, bananas, figs, almonds, sunflower seeds, eggs, butter, honey, vanilla, baking soda. Pumpkin bread muffin. Heftier than a typical muffin, this autumn-themed tidbit leaves eaters feeling full. Best served warm with a knife full of butter. Each grain of spice perfectly blends with the squash's earthy tones, smooth and luscious going down. Cinnamon roll muffin. By far the star of the show, only a genius could make this typically gluten-filled luxury tastes just the same without. Gooey, airy, and undeniably tempting, the finely wrapped dessert makes eyes widen and jaws drop. To leave the store without one in hand would be a major mistake. Other items include banana and blueberry muffins as well as keto cheesy biscuits. For lunch, enjoy a homemade chicken or tuna salad sandwich, a yummy bowl of garden or chef salad, or the customer favorite pizza, served on either a gluten-free or plant-based crust and topped with whatever the heart desires. The shop also serves an array of bread loaves, both flavored and plain. Current specials consist of $3 latte Mondays and biscuits and gravy Tuesdays. More are in the works. Cold Sips. Although the bakery mainly focuses on food, they still manage to provide a nice cup of joe, fancy or plain. Armed with an espresso machine and barista, Kelly, clocking in 9 years of Starbucks experience, cappuccinos, lattes, mochas, and macchiatos make up part of the steamy bill. Overall vibes. Although the physical space of the bakery stands somewhat small, the family-centric aura of the confectionery gives the same impression as walking into Grandma's kitchen, comfortable and inviting. Decorated with wall art, knickknacks, and string lights, the rectangle room serves as the perfect pit stop to and from the office. Yet being waited on by a crew of people who genuinely care about their mission takes the cake. It's one thing to have a gluten-free option, but another to talk to someone who gets it. Jennifer, Lisa, and Dan approach every guest with a smile on their face and a mind full of knowledge, ready to answer and accommodate allergy-related questions. They put their heart and soul into this business, making sure tall city kids, adults, and everyone in between who suffer from a gluten intolerance can happily enjoy the same delicacies as any other community member, a job that generally goes unrecognized. So if you're still wishy-washy about giving the shop a shot, don't go just because some journalist told you to. Go because this town prides itself on supporting local businesses, and that should include a niche mom and pop. Urban Air announces soft opening for Adventure Park. Midland owner plans to open to public in December, by Ben Schaefer. Urban Air Adventure Park is a space for kids and families in Midland to celebrate birthdays, play video games, and have fun. Gina Marie Soto, the owner of Midland's Little Gym and Urban Air, said they're expecting a soft opening in December for the Adventure Park. Soto also detailed some of the rides and games inside the venue at 4706 North Midkiff Road, Suite 1. This includes a ropes course, warrior course, a large indoor event hall, 8 party rooms, a flip zone, bumper cars, soft play, sky rider. It will serve as the home for the XP League, an S-Sports gaming league, a full cafe with beer and wine available for adults, trampoline and pro zone, plus a drop zone and 5 climbing walls. It's going to be a great piece to add for those coming to Midland who say, we don't have anything. Well, we do now because the big cities have these kinds of things, Soto said. Soto said she wanted a space that allows parents to kick back, watch football, or have a drink, while the kids can play in a safe and positive environment. More than 100 young people will be hired at Urban Air, according to Soto. I love hiring youth at their first job, where we can show them strong leadership values and educate them on how to balance a checkbook, and we provide that education, how to rewrite a resume, if they go on to their next job, Soto said. The Garlic Press to host annual beer dinner, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Nothing says October in West Texas quite like a dinner menu selected based off beer, an annual fall tradition at the Garlic Press. Owned and operated by Joshua and Jorinda Washburn, the Midland Staple will host the event at 7 p.m. Monday. Tickets run at $80 per person and can be bought at the garlicpress.net/events. Every year, Joshua finds a remarkable bill of sips before pairing the food, and the 2022 menu doesn't differ. From light and crisp to dark and sweet, guests can expect 5 featured courses. Here's the scoop on what you need to know before indulging in the alcoholic festivities. Deschutes King Crispy Pilsner. Born in Bend, Oregon, Deschutes Brewery remains family-owned and operated since 1988. Their King Crispy Pilsner, a light classic German-style Pilsner, which won the Pilsner Fest Bitburger Challenge in Portland, kicks off the night. The drink will accompany Oregon-style shrimp salad with shredded celery root, radishes, and house-made cocktail sauce. Eyinger Oktoberfest. All the way from Germany, this Marzen-style beer carries a 5.8% ABV and remains continuously ranked one of the best beers around the world. The following dishes will be paired with Berliner sausage, red sauerkraut, dill-browned butter spätzle, and fried shallot. Brooklyn Stonewall Inn IPA. Hailing from, you guess it, Brooklyn, the brewery formed in hopes of bringing stiff pours back to the city, once known as a powerhouse of American beer production. The Cruise Stonewall Inn IPA carries notes of citrus peel and grapefruit, refreshing and celebratory, the dish being served with chicken schnitzel with horseradish crust, leek potato hash, poultry demi-glace, and herbed citrus crackling butter. Avery Reverend Belgian-style quadruple ale, a divine collection of dark cherry, currant, molasses, and other spices. The Reverend, originating from Boulder, Colorado's Avery Brewing Company, begins the evening's plunge into decadent and elegant finishes. Packing a whopping 10% ABV, the following foods will join venison ossobuco, carbonade style, butternut squash puree, and crispy golden potatoes. Great Divide Peanut Butter Yeti. To close out the night, an imperial stout tasting just like a dark chocolate Reese's peanut butter cup takes the cake. Established in Denver, Colorado, Great Divide Brewing Company prides itself on putting flavors, any flavors imaginable, into a can. Here's the dessert: chocolate tart shell, peanut butter mousse, banana caramel, and fresh raspberries. Midland's Biggest Haunted House is Ready to Play by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Halloween lovers to their core, Amanda Zarate and her husband Victor Cortez, mastermind behind the design, knew Midland needed an annual attraction full of zombies, mummies, and vampires. Oh my. I mean, who else throws a dinner party every time a Michael Myers film hits theaters? After forming a group of friends to dabble in the haunted house industry, the duo saw the excitement spark throughout the community and pledged to provide the tall city an annual scare. 4 years later, five if counting the skipped year for COVID-19, the family still runs Trail of Horrors, an indoor-outdoor setup packed with 19 spooky scenes and a 15 to 20 minute walkthrough time. With a focus on quality entertainment, each scene contains a skilled actor portraying a crucial role or the sector's theme. From famous chainsaw experts to creepy clowns, the displays guarantee a fright. Actors cannot touch guests and vice versa. Initially, our actors started with people we knew involved in the Midland Community Theater, Zarate told the Reporter Telegram. Ever since then, it's been connections of who they know. We truly only hire people that want to be here and love doing it. That's what matters to us. Another important factor for the team lies in a six-letter word, safety. Based on lessons learned in previous years, Zarate said the crew installed some crucial changes this year. First, to avoid a line forming on the county road, Trail of Horrors designated a part of the land plot for people to snake around and keep out of harm's way. Next, because some areas of the walkthrough contain steps, no more than six guests at a time will be allowed to go through the holiday showstopper, keeping the line moving yet still enforcing regulations. Lastly, the sheriff's department will be on site every operating night. Nonetheless, the mom and pop also thought of ways to add more thrill. On Halloween and the night before, Trail of Horrors will be blackout. With only one flashlight in hand, patrons must bravely face the wicked taunts ahead. In the end, Zarate and Cortez hope to bring a captivating event to all Midlanders, big and small. Although gory and bloody, the enchantment doesn't go beyond anything already produced in a classic horror film and remains a family affair for all involved. My four-year-old daughter already jokes about how she's going to take over and be the boss, Zarate said. Since the showings usually fill quick and form a waiting line, tickets cannot be bought in advance, only at the door. Furthermore, to ensure their actors arrive home at a decent time, Zarate and Cortez promptly close down at 11 p.m. and will stop selling tickets beforehand. Ages 5 and under cost $15. Everyone else is $20. While waiting in line, snacks such as popcorn will be available for purchase. That's Midland's Trail of Horrors, October 14th through the 15th, 21st through the 22nd, 28th through the 31st, at 3112 South County Road, 1197. For more information about Midland's Trail of Horrors, such as hype videos, visit facebook.com/ Old Midland Trail of Horrors or instagram.com/ Midland's Trail of Horrors, TX. Obituaries and death notices from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday. A year has passed since our beloved has departed, Barton Dell Evans, on October 13, 2021, at the age of 77, at Midland Medical Lodge Hospice, Midland, Texas. A service will be held on October 13, 2022, to place his ashes alongside his mother at Rest Haven Memorial Park at 3 p.m. Bob Wayne Dutton, 75, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, October 8th. A celebration of life will be held on Friday, October 14th at 2 p.m. at First Methodist Church in Midland. He was born in Borger, Texas on March 12, 1947, to Bob and Mary Dutton. Bob was preceded in death by his parents and by his younger sister, Becky Groover. He is survived by Letty Dutton, his wife of 54 years. He is also survived by his daughters Robin Cookston and husband Jeff of San Francisco, and Laura Weber and husband Stephen of Austin, his brother Richard Dutton and wife Barbara of Palestine, Texas, his brother-in-law Davis Groover of Littlefield, Texas, his brother-in-law Wayne Ingram of Canyon, Texas, five grandchildren, numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. If you would like to honor Bob's memory, the family suggests the West Texas Food Bank, Habitat for Humanity, or First Methodist Church of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. With sadness, love, and profound gratitude, the family of Daniel Hiram Gonzalez announces his going home to be with the Lord at the age of 56 on October 11th in Midland. He was preceded in death by his parents, Reverend Hector R. Gonzalez, Benita O. Gonzalez, brothers Hector Gonzalez Jr. and Victor Gonzalez. Daniel is survived by Esther, his beloved wife, his sons Kalen and Kendall Gonzalez, a grandson, brother Richard Gonzalez and sister Brenda Hobson. The family will be holding a memorial service at Lifehouse Fellowship in Midland, October 15th at 2 p.m. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Eula Zachary, age 94, of Midland, went to be with her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on Thursday, October 6th. She is preceded in death by her loving husband, Ben Zachary, her parents, Eddie and Esther Johnson, her siblings, Reverend Dudley Johnson, Liller Faye Washington, Ciola Robinson, and Velma Johnson. She leaves to cherish her memory her daughter, Sharon Zachary, grandchildren, and a host of loving nieces, nephews, great-nieces, nephews, and great-great-nephew and nieces. Arrangements are entrusted to Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home in Midland, which is also the location for visitation on Friday, October 14th, from 5 to 7 p.m. Celebration of her life will be held Saturday, October 15th, 11 a.m., at Macedonia Baptist Church in Midland. Jesus Carlos Ortega, 57, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, October 11th. Viewings will be Saturday, October 15th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, October 16th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. A graveside will be held Monday, October 17th, at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, October 14th, 2022. ODC votes for first Nacero incentive payment. The Odessa Development Corporation Board voted 6-1 Thursday to pay Nacero the vast majority of its first $2 million incentive payment, although there was some question as to whether the company actually complied with all of the conditions within its economic development agreement with the city. In June 2021, the Odessa City Council agreed to allow Nacero to build a $7 billion natural gas processing and production facility near Penwell. The project is expected to create 3,500 construction jobs and 350 permanent jobs. As a result of the agreement, the ODC will provide Nacero $20 million in grant incentives over 10 years, assuming they meet all the benchmarks set out in the agreement annually. On Thursday, Assistant City Manager Cindy Munsey informed the ODC board that the accounting firm, Weaver, tested a sampling of the expenditure documents presented by Nacero and discovered they'd spent 99.58% of the $100 million they had promised to spend on the project during the first year. Since Nacero didn't completely fulfill the terms of the contract, the company is now only entitled to a prorated amount. The Odessa City Council will have a final say on the matter, and four members of the council were in attendance during Thursday's meeting: Mayor Javier Joven and council members Denise Swanner, Mark Mata, and Steve Thompson. ODC board member Chris Crow voted against paying Nacero the incentive. Both he and board member Larry Robinson voiced concern that Nacero included amongst its expenditures those made in 2018 to 2020, when the contract with the city wasn't signed until June 2021. Included in the expenditures are options to purchase 2,530 acres of land. They also questioned whether Nacero should be able to consider salaries as capital expenditures. Crow also questioned why the ODC's compliance committee didn't review Nacero's grant request, but was told protocols changed that made it necessary. The question as to whether the city can consider expenditures prior to June 2021 is up for interpretation, Munsey said. As for salaries, she said it was a common accounting practice to consider them when a company is designing a new process and a new type of facility. Board Chairman David Booten said he believed the earlier expenditures should be considered. Quote, if you had a company that was interested in a piece of property and they were intending to apply for a grant, there's a likelihood, because their information would become public, that they may purchase that property prior to the execution of the agreement in order to keep them from seeing a competitive disadvantage, end quote, Booten said. Quote, so if that's the case, and that's part of their investment, why would you disallow that when truly that is a part of it, end quote. Booten said he intends to meet with city attorney Natasha Brooks to fine-tune the language in the contract so it's clear when expenditures can be considered. Crow said he thinks the Nacero project is a, quote, fabulous, end quote, one that he's looking forward to, but he has concerns. The groundbreaking keeps getting pushed back, and other projects have never come to fruition. Quote, I'm really hoping this one is going to, but at the same time that this was going on, Nacero was looking at projects in Arizona and looking at projects in Pennsylvania, end quote, Crow said. Quote, are we sure that all of these expenses are 100% attributable to Penwell and not to other projects? That's just a lot of questions here, end quote. Knowing that representatives of Nacero were in the audience, Crow said he is sure they'd answer, quote, absolutely, end quote, to his question, but when given the opportunity to address them directly, declined. However, Robinson did take the chance to ask Nacero's chief operating officer, Hal Buchnight, questions. He wanted to know if residents could see any evidence actual work is being done on the site and if any money has been spent in Odessa thus far. Quote, no, we haven't turned any dirt. We have looked for environmental contamination, so we've spotted and identified those points with stakes so we can go back when we do a phase two and we can clear that up, end quote, Buchnight said. A local engineering survey firm was hired to do that work, Buchnight said. Buchnight was also introduced Nacero's new chief financial officer, Jesse Wong. He and Wong assured the board the financial documents provided to the city did not include any expenditures for projects outside Penwell. Quote, we've done zero design development on any other site, end quote, Buchnight said. Quote, so anything we did on the prior job, when we were looking first at Arizona, that was not part of this documentation report. We pulled that out. There's probably another $30 or $40 million in stuff that we pulled out in that process, end quote. Crow still wasn't satisfied. Quote, I look forward to funding this project. I really do. I think we've got the cart before the horse a little bit here. I would like to feel better about making sure we really have a viable project. This is me. I know my opinion, and $5 won't buy a coffee at Starbucks. But I would rather see more of a tangible capital investment before, end quote, paying the incentive, Crow said. In other matters, the board voted 5-2 to sign a new contract with the Weaver auditing firm, with Crow and Jay Kirk casting the dissenting votes. Munsey told the board the city council approved a new contract with Weaver, because the city recently moved all of its billing and collection into a new system, and it was, quote, wise, end quote, to have the existing accounting firm watch over the transfer process. Muncy said that transfer did not impact ODC, however. Board member Melanie Hellman noted no other qualified firms responded to the city's request for bids. During the ODC meeting February 10th, board members had a lengthy discussion about ODC not having its own bank accounts. They also discussed the city's auditing practices. Crow told his fellow members that, quote, commingling, end quote, ODC's assets with the city's seemed dangerous to him. Although he stressed he wasn't alleging any wrongdoing, he said he only gets the financial information the city and Weaver provides him. During the earlier discussion about Nocero, Crow alluded to what he said were, quote, quote, discrepancies, end quote, in Weaver's report on the company. In the spotlight, districts visit ECISD for Learning Lab. Ector County ISD was visited by representatives from 11 districts this week to learn how the district made its state accountability jump in the last few years. The district was rated AB under state accountability ratings after being AC the last time districts were rated before COVID. The System of Great Schools is part of the Texas Education Agency. The TEA website says SGS helps Texas school district leaders ensure that more students have access to better schools every year by increasing the number of high-quality, best-fit options. The team recruits prospective districts to join the network each spring. The idea is to increase the number of A and B rated schools and decrease the number of D and F schools. Thursday's session at the ECISD Administration Building was focused on community engagement and change management. The visiting school officials toured Ector College Prep Middle School, Noel and Milam Elementary Schools. They saw a video of George H.W. Bush, New Tech, Odessa, and OC Techs. NTO Principal Gerardo Ramirez was on hand Wednesday to answer questions. Not every district belongs to SGS, but all the ones that visited ECISD Wednesday and Thursday were in it. Assistant Superintendent of Student and School Support Alicia Syverson said there were about 40 participants. Duncan Klessman, Executive Advisor for Diversa, said his firm supports five districts in System of Great Schools. Quote, TEA is responsible for the whole project, and then they hire outside groups to come in and support the districts. We're contractors of TEA, end quote, Klessman said. This is the second year they have done learning labs. Quote, we want to do them in a district where people can showcase the work that they're doing and we all learn from it, end quote, Klessman said. Quote, so really, that started yesterday. Yesterday morning, we did school tours. Then Ector County did a panel, end quote. They spend about the first third of the time focusing on the district they're visiting. The rest of the time is focused on, quote, the work of carrying out the overall strategy of the System of Great Schools, end quote, Klessman said. Klessman, a former superintendent of Spring Branch ISD, said he didn't have specific data, but he knows data shows System of Great Schools has helped lift the performance of districts under state ratings. He retired as Spring Branch chief in 2015, and he was there for 11 years. Klessman and a partner formed Diversa about 3 years ago. He said he'd never spent time in ECISD before, but was impressed with what he saw. Quote, I think they have some very innovative programs that are very student-focused, and I think just from what I observed over the last 2 days clearly shows why they've had the results they've had in the last couple of years, end quote, Klessman said. He added that another thing that you see is a clear alignment of the work of the system. Quote, I think that's really important that organizations have this clear alignment from the superintendent throughout the whole system. See, you see a constant focus and language of what they're working on. And I'm very big on creating stability, and I think that creates stability. They're offering choices of programs to students. I was able to see a fine arts school, and it was just great to see all the variety of what the kids are being exposed to. I think that's just so important to do, end quote, Klessman said. ECISD Executive Director of Choice Programs Access and Support, Chad Krausen, said TEA contacted ECISD about coming to Odessa to conduct an SGS learning lab, in large part because they saw in the accountability scores that they had made some pretty big gains. Quote, I think some of that can be attributed to the work that we've done with SGS, and so there were districts from around the state that wanted to visit some of those schools, end quote, Krausen said. Krausen said it was a learning event. Quote, it's always great to have an opportunity to get together with like-minded folks and share lessons from the different experiences that we've had. We're all driving toward the same goals and outcomes, but we come from very different places all across the state, different demographics in our communities, different levels of community support, different district strategic plans. So when we can get together at events like this and learn together from the successes and failures that we've all made, then it helps us to move the ball forward for all the students across Texas, not just necessarily the ones that are in our particular district. That's what's exciting to me about these events, end quote, Krausen said. Seguin ISD Superintendent Matthew Gutierrez said it's not always easy for him to get away as a district chief, but he made himself available for this learning lab. Quote, I specifically wanted to come in and see some of the work that Ector County is doing with the system of great schools, and especially because of the progress that they have seen in those campuses that have gone through some type of redesign. We are going through the same work in Seguin ISD. I had the opportunity to visit two campuses with a team. That was Noel Elementary and the Ector College Prep Middle School. There were certainly some really great takeaways, and it was really easy to see how and why the campuses in Ector County had made significant gains academically. I think it really begins with a solid system of support that starts from the board level all the way down to the campus leadership level. You see all of the stakeholders moving in the same direction to ensure that learning is in place in the various communities that is going to meet the needs of the community here in Ector County, end quote, Gutierrez said. Quote, the population is very similar to Seguin. This school district is seeing really positive results. But just recently, Ector County was recognized by the Mexican Association of School Boards and awarded Outstanding School Board. It really made sense that that team focused on student achievement is really playing a pivotal role in that progress, end quote, he said. Quote, I think the important thing that we took from listening to the panel that spoke to us was how that community engagement piece was also so important. Really listening to the community, which consists of the parents and the staff, and really trying to identify a learning experience that's unique and innovative. I think that is what's really making a key difference in the school district, and that is something that we are looking to do in Seguin ISD, end quote, Gutierrez said. Seguin has about 7,500 students on 14 campuses. The district's demographics also are similar to ECISD. They are not rated. Gutierrez, who has been superintendent for 5 years, said they joined System of Great Schools last year and they have been able to triple their number of high-performing schools from 2 to 6. Quote, there are certainly a lot of challenges that we face similar to Ector County with mobility and high poverty. But then overcoming many of those challenges and seeing positive student outcomes, which is my primary reason for wanting to come to learn from Ector County, end quote, Gutierrez said. Judge admonished by state for, quote, unprofessional demeanor, end quote. An Ector County District Court judge was recently admonished by the Texas State Commission on Judicial Conduct for referring to COVID-19 as the, quote, China virus, end quote, and a potential juror lodged a complaint. Judge Justin Lowe, who replaced John Smith as the 161st District Court judge in 2020, was also ordered to obtain an hour of instruction with an assigned mentor on courtroom demeanor. According to a commission report, Lowe was presiding over pre-qualification for jury duty on May 7th, 2021, when Lowe spoke about the, quote, China virus, end quote, and stated, quote, yeah, I said it, end quote, and, quote, the attorneys would be upset I said that, end quote, to potential jurors. Some of the potential jurors whooped and clapped their hands, and Lowe encouraged them by laughing and nodding, the report stated. An Asian American potential juror reported she felt unsafe and uncomfortable after the comments were made, especially because there had been recent hate crimes committed against Asian Americans, according to the report. Lowe called some of the prerequisite questions, quote, stupid, end quote, and said, quote, I don't know why I have to ask this, end quote. Lowe testified before the commission he was trying to expose bias and or prejudices among the potential jurors. He also told the commission he knew it would be offensive to some people, but he was, quote, doing it for a higher purpose, end quote. The commission ordered Lowe to obtain additional education, quote, for his unprofessional demeanor during jury selection, which demonstrated bias and prejudice against potential jurors through his words and actions, end quote, the report stated. Murray to bring bond items to board meeting. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray will bring several bond-related items to the Board of Trustees at their regular meeting this coming Tuesday. During a Tuesday workshop, trustees tasked Murray with providing proposals for a bond timeline, a bond committee structure, and to help establish listening opportunities for trustees to talk with staff members and parents. The structure of the committee includes what the committee should look like, what types of people and responsibilities should make up that committee, and an advocacy plan, quote, because they realized that we didn't have enough of our parents that played an active role in actually supporting the bond or voting for the bond, end quote. Quote, we want to make sure that our parents are well aware of what's happening, so we'll be working on the development of an advocacy plan within the organization, end quote, Murray said during his media call Wednesday. During Tuesday's workshop, board members talked about why the bond did not pass and next steps. The bond was in two propositions. For the first one, 76.51% or 5,858 people voted against it, and 1,799 or 23.49% voted for it. For Proposition 2, 73.43% or 5,652 people voted against it, and 25.57% or 2,045 people voted for it. The total number of voters was 7,826 or 9.48%. There were 82,527 voters in Ector County in May. Quote, the Board of Trustees has been listening to a lot of members of our community. They talked a little bit amongst themselves, reflected, and they shared those thoughts, those ideas, and those concerns, and their words of guidance with me as the superintendent on Tuesday evening, end quote, Murray said. He added that all the trustees are interested in pursuing another bond. Quote, the needs of our students have not diminished, end quote, Murray said. Quote, in fact, ECISD has grown quite a bit from last year to this year, and so we have overcrowded facilities and other needs, other academic needs that new facilities would provide for our students. The trustees were very interested in moving forward, end quote. The first step is to identify a committee that reflects the community. The district has a demographic study under development, so the committee will look at the results of that. Quote, then the board will advise. That will give me recommendations. We will work together as a team to hopefully create a structure of a committee, and then we'll populate that with names, actual people that will fill those roles, parents, again, students, staff members, community members, etc. But the goal of the committee is to be reflective of the entire community, north, south, east, and west, all demographics. All stakeholders should be represented on the committee itself, end quote, Murray added. The committee will look at the results of the demographic study. Quote, they'll look at our growth, the number of students that we have. The demographic study will certainly help identify the locations of people that are moving into Ector County. All of these data sources will guide the committee, but ultimately the committee of community members, staff members, and parents will provide a recommendation to the Board of Trustees, end quote, Murray said. Quote, at this point, everything is on the table. The committee hasn't even been formed yet. The board has not approved a committee structure. So it all starts by that committee coming together and looking at data and then making some recommendations, end quote, Murray said. Asked if the Permian Strategic Partnership with 19 members is going to be involved, Murray said they have representatives within the community, and so they could be represented on it. Quote, but again, we're way too early to make those decisions, end quote, Murray said. Asked if the Odessa Accountability Project had offered to be part of the bond committee and been provided with data, Murray said, if any individual or entity made a public records request, the district has provided those. Quote, so if that organization or any individual has asked for data through the open records request opportunity, yes, we provide that. I've not directly been asked, but the organization has, I'm sure, end quote, Murray said. ECISD this week had 11 districts visit from all over the state. Quote, we were asked this summer by the Texas Education Agency to host a convening of school districts, and so we said we'd be happy to. This summer, we were asked to put this together, and so we did, and they're here today, October 12th, and tomorrow, October 13th, end quote, Murray said. The districts were here to observe and gather information. Quote, they're working together as a group and then learning about the work that we do as an organization. Then the Texas Education Agency is facilitating these conversations, end quote, he added. Next Wednesday is an early release day. Quote, once a month, we provide an opportunity for our teachers and administrators to learn on their own. And so in order to do that, we dismiss our students for half a day. Next Wednesday is an early release day in ECISD so that we can provide some learning experiences for our teachers and our leaders, end quote, Murray said. If parents are interested in knowing the exact time of the early release, Murray said to check the ECISD website or contact the campuses. Murray also mentioned that ECISD received the 2022 Outstanding School District Award from the Mexican American School Boards Association last Friday. ECISD trustees accepted the honor at MASBA's 2022 conference in San Antonio. Quote, our district has seen tremendous growth and progress over the last several years, and this award is really recognition of that, end quote, Murray said in a news release. Quote, it is a testament to the work of the 4,200 ECISD employees, end quote, he added. Quote, the teachers who serve the needs of our kids every day, the principals who provide guidance, and then all of the support team members that we have, from food services to transportation to curriculum and instruction to counselors and nurses, everyone that plays a role in the lives of our kids. We are deeply grateful for the honor, end quote, he said. MASBA is a voluntary nonprofit statewide education association that has served local Texas school boards since 1970. October sales tax check up more than 30%. The city of Odessa announced on Thursday that it received its October sales tax check in the amount of $5,721,617.33. This amount includes the economic development sales tax of 1/4 cent. The city of Odessa will receive $4,577,293.86, and the Odessa Development Corporation will receive $1,144,323.47. The city saw an increase in sales tax revenue, with October's sales tax revenue total of $4,577,293.86, which reflects a $1,089,892.89, or 31.25%, as compared to October 2021. The year-to-date total sales tax revenue for fiscal year 2022-23 is up 44.66%, or $1,413,047.88, as compared to budgeted amount expected at this point in the fiscal year. In addition, the 2022-23 year-to-date amount is above the previous fiscal year-to-date amount by $1,089,892.89, or 31.25%. The city has budgeted $44 million in net sales tax revenues for this current fiscal year. Medical Center Health System this month collected $4,629,856. That amount is about a $1.2 million increase from the same time period last year. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax revenue from 2 months prior to collection, i.e., October's collection is based on August sales. EEOC sues UTPB under Equal Pay Act. Female accounting professor paid less than male professors for the same work, federal agency charges. The University of Texas Permian Basin violated the Equal Pay Act by paying lesser wages to a female assistant slash associate professor of accounting than it paid to two males hired to perform the same job, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission charged in a lawsuit filed Thursday. A news release details the female professor began her employment on the UTPB Midland campus during the 2015-16 academic year. Her job duties included teaching at least 3 courses in the fall and 3 courses in the spring, making sufficient intellectual contributions to maintain scholarly academic status, advising students, and other service-related activities for the university. The university said it does not comment on pending litigation, quote, and our pleadings, when filed, will provide UTPB's response to the allegations, end quote. An EEOC official said they advise all persons that they represent not to make public statements while the case is in active litigation. According to the EEOC's lawsuit, during her employment with UTPB, 2 other male professors in the same department performing the same duties were paid higher wages. After she complained about the unequal wages and filed a charge with the EEOC, UTPB lowered her performance evaluations. Such alleged conduct violates the Equal Pay Act of 1963, which prohibits discrimination and compensation on the basis of sex. EEOC filed suit in U.S. District Court for the Western District of Texas, Midland Division, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission versus University of Texas at Permian Basin. Civil action number 7:22-CV-00210. After first attempting to reach a pre-litigation settlement through its conciliation process, the agency seeks back pay to remedy the pay disparity. The EEOC is also seeking liquidated damages due to the willfulness in not paying the female professor a commensurate wage even after she brought the matter to the attention of management. Injunctive relief to promote non-discriminatory pay practices will also be sought as part of the suit. quote, energetically enforcing equal pay laws is currently one of the national strategic priorities for the commission, end quote, said EEOC Regional Attorney Robert A. Canino. Quote, it is important that our places of higher education fairly and equitably remedy gender-based pay disparities, end quote. Quote, UTPB failed to properly pay the professor for her important work in teaching the students at its Midland campus, end quote, said Suzanne Anderson, assistant regional attorney for the EEOC. Quote, university management did not respond properly when she complained about the pay equity issue. As she continued to teach at UTPB, the wage gap between her and the two male professors widened. EEOC will continue to advocate for compliance with the EPA to ensure that employees are paid equally when they perform substantially equal work, end quote. For more information about equal pay and compensation, see tinyurl.com/3EHU9XAS. Local news roundup. Fentanyl seized during traffic stop. A traffic stop led to the seizure of 115 grams of fentanyl recently and the arrest of a 44-year-old Odessa man. According to an Odessa Police Department report, Anthony Duane Freeman, a.k.a. Anthony Jackson, was pulled over near Melody and East 38th Street on September 29th after he failed to stop at a proper place at Everglades and East 38th. When the officer noticed a strong smell of marijuana coming from inside Freeman's pickup truck, he conducted a search and found nearly 82 grams of fentanyl inside, the report stated. After getting a search warrant for Freeman's house on Honeysuckle, officers found 33 grams of fentanyl and a scale, the report stated. Freeman was arrested on suspicion of manufacture, delivery of a controlled substance, a first-degree felony punishable by 5 years to life in prison. He was released from the Ector County Jail after posting a $60,000 surety bond. Fifth grader arrested. The staff at Jordan Elementary on Thursday learned of a threat made by a student Wednesday. A fifth grade boy told others he was going to bring a gun to school. The students reported it Thursday, and upon investigating it, ECISD police arrested the boy on the Class A misdemeanor charge of threat of exhibition of weapon on school property or bus, a news release said. Quote, as we have stated many times and followed through with, school and school district leaders will continue to treat any mention of school violence seriously and will continue to charge students criminally as well as apply school discipline if threats like this are made, end quote, the release said. House of Horrors. Bloody Bill's Haunted House creation enters 24th season. Bloody Bill Pond loves horror. Each Halloween since 1998, he's run his haunted attraction at 2215 West 2nd Street, offering plenty of scares and thrills to customers who dare walk through. Pond, who grew up in Dallas, is a big fan of horror movies, haunted houses, and just about anything else that is spooky or macabre. Pond's 24th season of his Halloween haunted attraction is called Chainsaw Carnage. The attraction will be open from 7 p.m. to midnight on October 21st, October 22nd, October 28th, October 29th, and from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. on October 30th through 31st. The Chainsaw Carnage is an outdoor maze that involves several different obstacles. Quote, it's just a very good maze, end quote, Pond said. Quote, there's a lot of curtains, and you don't know what's behind the curtains. You don't know what's real and what's not real. Jump, scares, and all galore, end quote. Pond's love of everything horror started when he was in elementary school. Quote, I've been doing haunted houses since the 80s, even before they were popular, end quote, Pond said. Quote, my mom was a PTA president of my elementary school, and I volunteered for the school carnival, and that's where I got my first dose of where I wanted to do haunted houses forever. That's what got me interested in that, end quote. It was also his love of horror movies that got him interested in haunted houses. When he's not busy each fall with his Odessa creation, he's often making horror movies via his own filmmaking business, Bloody Bill Productions. Over the years, his haunted house has taken on different names. Quote, I came down here to take a job at a local TV station, end quote, Pond said. Quote, I bought this place and started DEF CON 1, Haunted Warehouse. Then we did Circus of the Dead Murder Maze, now we're doing Chainsaw Carnage, end quote. In the past, his haunted house has taken place inside the 2nd Street. Pond had to move his haunted attraction outside where there's no roof because of building code until he can install a sprinkler system. Next year, his business will be back indoors. Quote, unfortunately, when COVID hit, it changed a lot of laws with the city and stuff, end quote, Pond said. Quote, they expired on the grandfather clause of the building. Now they're wanting a sprinkler system or a fire suppression system, which are like $100,000. but I've saved up for it. It just won't be ready for this year. We're outside for one more year. We can get by with it legally because there's no roof over our head." End quote. Next year, for the 25th season, Pond says he will have something built inside the warehouse, quote, "that'll be even bigger and badder than West Texas has seen," end quote. Pond said he's built a tradition with his scary shenanigans. Quote, "there are kids that work for me," end quote, Pond said. Quote, "you have to be at least 15 years old to volunteer to work here. There are kids that worked for me when I opened. Now their own kids are working here. That tells you how long the haunted house has been around," end quote. Volunteers that are interested can apply online at tinyurl.com/224KM3CE. Quote, "it's the same mainstay people," end quote, Pond said. Quote, "every year, we have a third of those people or new people coming in. The thing with haunted houses is we get kind of old, and it's hard to lug around those chainsaws when you get older. It seems like the crews, once they get to a certain age, they retire, but what's cool is they send their kids out here to work, and they still bring their families out here to work. It's kind of like a family thing out here," end quote. Pond says there is a waiting list. Quote, "you can sign up," end quote, Pond said. Quote, "we start a waiting list, and someone can't show up, we bring in someone else. It's like a football team," end quote. For this year's setup, Pond said they gutted both haunted houses inside the warehouse. Quote, "we took all the props from Circus of the Dead and all the props from DEF CON, and we shoved them into this maze to keep scaring people while they get the sprinkler system going," end quote, Pond said. Quote, "we took all the walls from both haunted houses and made one big maze. It's just as good as the one inside. There's just no ceiling. Mother Nature is its roof," end quote. Over the years, Pond has collected different items to make his haunted house scarier. Quote, "I collect stuff," end quote, Pond said. Quote, "a lot of my stuff comes from garage sales and flea markets and thrift stores and even trash bins. I'm not too proud to get to dig through a trash bin, but I find the coolest thing sometimes. I don't like the store-bought stuff. I like repurposing things," end quote. While this year might take place outside, he's guaranteeing that it will be just as scary as before. Quote, "we just added to it and made it more claustrophobic," end quote, Pond said. Quote, "tickets are $15. You can also buy a VIP ticket for $20, which allows you to skip to the front," end quote. Jacob Garcia to perform before Jackalope's game. Jacob Garcia has been involved in music ever since he started playing the drums at age 4. The Odessa resident has since learned how to play the guitar and piano. He works full-time as a trainer, but he finds the time to play at several different gigs all over the Permian Basin, from Kermit to the Midland County Fair. This week, he will perform before the Odessa Jackalope's home game at 5:30 p.m. Saturday at Ector County Coliseum as part of the Pink the Basin Night. Quote, "I'm pretty excited because I've done a lot of stuff for cancer awareness," end quote, Garcia said. Quote, "I've played for Relay for Life as well. It's just my way to give back and give hope and help encourage people that are fighting cancer and be encouraging," end quote. Garcia graduated from Kermit High School in 2007. He plays mostly Texas country covers, but also writes his own music on occasion as well. Quote, "music runs in my family," end quote, Garcia said. Quote, "I grew up in church playing music, I guess more or less where it all boils down to," end quote. While he started off playing the drums, he was mostly playing guitar by age 16. For him, playing music is just therapeutic. Quote, "it's just another way to express myself," end quote, Garcia said. Quote, "for me, I feel like it takes me into another world. It takes away any reality," end quote. He says it has been tough for him to find the time to play while juggling his work and life balance, but he relishes any chance he gets. Quote, "lately, it's been a lot more challenging to get more practice and whatnot," end quote, Garcia said. Quote, "earlier in the days when I was younger, it was a lot easier," end quote. Saturday's event is one of the numerous events benefiting Pink the Basin that have taken place during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Quote, "well, basically, the Jackalopes have been kind enough to do the Pink the Basin night," end quote. Pink the Basin Executive Director Carolina Keith said. Quote, "our president, Sheila Simmons, will be dropping the puck, and at halftime, we're going to have several breast cancer survivors that are going to be in the back of the pickup for the t-shirt toss. That's going to be so much fun," end quote. Pink the Basin is a nonprofit organization that helps provide funds for women battling breast cancer in the Permian Basin. Funds are distributed to partnering hospitals throughout the Permian Basin who provide mammograms and other breast cancer diagnostic services. Quote, "all the money stays in the Permian Basin," end quote, Keith said. Quote, "the money is for mammograms, biopsies, and other diagnostic services that are needed for people that may not be able to afford a standard mammogram. And there are a lot of people that, due to COVID, they've had the issue where they've had to select a large deductible on their insurance where they had to go part-time, and lost most of their insurance. This is where Pink the Basin funds will help those people to get that life-saving mammogram, end quote. The evening's events will begin with Garcia's performance. Quote, we're so excited, end quote, Keith said. Quote, it'll be a meet and greet, and people will be playing during that time. This will give a chance for everybody, including all the survivors, to come and see everyone. It's just a good time for us to be together. Sometimes it's really difficult, especially for a lot of the ladies who don't get to go out much. So we're thrilled that the Jackalopes are doing this for us, end quote. Tickets can be purchased through Pink the Basin directly for $10. Half of the proceeds from tickets sold will be donated back to the Pink the Basin. The Jackalopes will also be wearing special pink jerseys in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Those jerseys will be auctioned off following the game in support of Pink the Basin.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.